Hello, and welcome to Landwise, Promoting Sustainable Crop Production, a podcast series about sustainable ways to grow food in New Zealand. I'm Georgia O'Brien, Extension Coordinator for Landwise based in Hastings. Landwise has been around since 1999, helping farmers and growers to develop and test new practices through on-farm trials and extending cutting-edge research to the farm or orchard gate. Through our podcast series, we are bringing the insights of lead researchers, technologists, and farmers to listeners from all over the ag and hort industry. Each month has a theme, with guests joining us weekly for discussions. At the end of the month, we'll have them back as a panel to talk together and respond to your queries. This month, we're looking at Harnessing the Power of Microbes, brought to you by our platinum sponsors, BASF, Hawke's Bay Regional Council, Vegetables New Zealand, and Processed Vegetables New Zealand. Today we hear from Dr. Johanna Stayart, Trichoderma Research Scientist and Molecular Biologist at Lincoln AgriTech, and Max Purnell, a Trichoderma Practitioner and Dairy Farmer. Joe and Max will talk about their work with Trichoderma and explain how a dairy farmer from up Thames Way ended up extracting DNA in a molecular lab in Lincoln. Thanks for joining me, Max and Joe. If I could start with you, Max, you were on the AgMart board for a number of years. Can you tell me about how your interest in soils and background in farming led you to learning about Trichoderma?
Well, I think probably the interest in soils was probably, a bit genetic. In my family were soils people and market gardeners, etc. But the processes for how we grow things have always interested me as a farmer. Sort of entered the dairy industry when I was 17, I think, and it always interested me. But fast forward to the patch of play that in about 2003, I think, somewhere around then there, I was appointed to AgMard, the Agricultural Research and Marketing and Development Trust. And during that period of time, we were giving money away to agriculture, pretty much anything that grew out of the ground. We were able to go there, and it was a very interesting period of time. And I would have to say that the most interesting and out there research work that I ran into was Dr. Robert Hill. And Robert's work, which I first saw by way of presentation, was so fascinating that when I had cause to be in Asia at one point, I took a side trip to a job that he was doing in the Planted Forest Project in Borneo. And at that time, he had been up there for several years extracting Trichoderma fungi from the roots of the surrounding forest and putting it back into Acacia magnum that they were growing out. I think it was 500,000 seedlings were going out annually out of there, and they were struggling in the tepid jungles with only about 30% of them making them to specification. And Robert went up there and isolated some trichodermas out of the healthy jungles around the healthy plants around the area, and had moved that up to a staggering 75%. And when he showed me the trial, there was some hundreds of thousands of seedlings all layered out level on rows with irrigators going over the top to keep them going. And his trial had a bump in it. It was different colour. It was just obvious to the eye. So that was my initial interest. Started there.
Yep.
And so I came home very interested in how we can take that technology and put it into the New Zealand farming systems. And I guess that's what I've been playing with ever since.
Mm. So how did that transition work, going from a very tropical climate to trying to apply that research and extraction and application to a more temperate climate in New Zealand?
Well, I think the fungal world is everywhere. It's ubiquitous. And for me, the technology that Robert was involved in provided a deep window into the complexity of the biological world that we are now, I think, as a nation, just starting to understand as the opportunity. And his work back in New Zealand was mostly in Pinus radiata, and I think if you put on some of the people who was working with him with the Pinus radiata, you'll find he was getting similar results.
Mm.
quite stunning results back here in New Zealand. And of course, the other thing that I became aware of, that this technology was all around the globe. It didn't matter where you were, there was people that were using the understanding of trichodermas and putting them into the production system. At one conference I attended, I took it upon myself as a matter of deep interest to figure out where it all was. And at one conference I ran into a chap who was putting out tons a week of mycelium into the production systems in Brazil. And at that point, I can't remember what it was, but it was like 20-30% of the soya beans in Brazil were being grown with the assistance of trichoderma. So it was excluding at that point a great deal of the need for some of the pesticides, herbicides, etc. I would argue that from an international perspective, we're way behind on this one. Mm. That's another subject as to why.
So, Joe, could you tell me a bit about the extraction process, how you source the trichoderma from local environments and grow them in the lab?
Yeah. So we follow Robert Hill's principles that we tend to look for an outstanding plant specimen, something that's looking really healthy, particularly if it's surrounded by neighbours that aren't looking so good, something that stands out. And then we take a very small root sample, take it back to the lab, sterilise it, cut it up, and then we use special media in which we put these little root pieces into, and the trichoderma grows out. It's always the first one out the gate. It's a really good saprophyte, which means it eats dead organic matter. So we have a very nutrient-poor media, but trichoderma loves it, not a problem. Mm. And it will pop its head out, and then we can take a sample of the trichoderma and grow it up and store it in our freezers here and start working on it.
Right, so you can keep it dormant in the freezer while you're ready, while you get your trials ready or plants for inoculation?
Yep. So we generally store it at minus 80. The other way to store it is to put the spores, dry them down and have them dried. But the spores are, it's the green powdery stuff that you see that people are most familiar with when they see something mouldy. It's that green powdery stuff, that's the spores, and that's what we add when we are using it in trials. We apply the spores to the seed or spray it onto a plant, put it into the soil, whatever the application requires.
Right, so there's lots of methods you can get it into the farm system.
Absolutely. I mean, if you're dealing with a root endophyte, then really the best method is to get it in as that seed germinates. If you're doing cuttings, then you do it at the time of setting the cuttings. And trichoderma will rapidly enter into the root system and it will live there for the life of the plant. It forms a symbiosis and they work cooperatively together. And in fact, we are now coming to believe that you probably will find most plants on this planet will have a trichoderma associated with them.
Wow, that's pretty incredible. Max, if I could ask you to expand a bit further on what you were talking about before. So what sort of benefits are you seeing in the plants? You mentioned improved disease resistance in forest plantations.
Yes, I think that when you're looking at the trichoderma, I guess I'm a farmer, and so that I'm able to describe things in more simplistic terms or more overarching terms. And so the first thing you've got to realise is that, as Joe says, there is an arrangement by every plant on the globe with some trichoderma. What staggers me is that the more I've looked is how many there are. And so the only way that really seems to have any efficacy of finding out which one's going to be beneficial to you and which one's not is exhaustive trialing. There's been lots of people try with genetic, etc. The Israelis put a lot of work in there. And really, Robert's method that Joe's just described is the way forward. And so I came home and with that knowledge, when I left Agmat in particular, I climbed into it. And at the time, I had dry stock on the farm and was able to, and it was a terrible drought, just like the one there was now. And so we then took all the samples I wind back a bit. Robert was very gracious with my interest and came and isolated. We spent some days in our community and on my farm and isolated 50 different root endophyte isolates of trichoderma and took them back and grew them out and then supplied them back to us. And he also used them himself in trials around the country on various things, and we trialled them in several different ways around here. But I was very interested in the observational trials. I think we've missed that. One of my hardy annuals is this, that we've ruined the agricultural sciences by removing observation. Sciences, observation, hypothesis, and then measurement. And the observation, of course, comes from the practitioners, and we just don't do enough of that. So I was very fascinated with what the trained eye could see, because Robert clearly had that in spades when he looked at stuff. And so we ran a drill in a very dry summer. I took the opportunity of coating the trichodermas that we were trialling, and we had 50 of them, and I drilled with a long-suffering friend who owned a very good drill. We drilled in rows away from the race on a variety of paddocks, and so that we could drive down the race with the trained eye of our friends and fellow farmers, who would then score the different rows, and from that we developed the ones that we thought were better than others. And there seemed to be a high degree of repeatability, I would argue, using a science terms, between what people could see and what turned up in the more comprehensive trials. For example, in the nursery around the corner that was growing native plants for planting waterways. I think one of the things that you have to that I've come to understand too, that matters when you're looking at this to help with your thinking, and that is that, as Robert pointed out to me, that if you find a trichoderma that appears to work well with a plant, it will seamlessly do the same thing right across the plant kingdom.
Right.
And so there's a kind of a train of thought that you have to go through. It takes a little while for it to sink in, that actually the fungal world's in charge, and every living thing on the top of it is just mere solar collectors and fruiting bodies for the fungal world. And so if you start to think like that, it changes the way you farm, and it has changed me. So we rolled on to trying to figure out how to make this practical. How could we then get our seeds coated in a practical sense and get them in the ground and make them fit into our production system? And I'm being a little long-winded here, but this is the sum total of what we did, really. And so that initially we were coating the seed with white glue and with the large seeds that you could get a coating on. As Joe says, the game in town is to get them to, as the seed germinates, is to get it to make an association as it first comes out, as it first starts to spiralate, to make an association with one of the fungi. So we were laboriously coating it like that, and that really wasn't that practical. It was very difficult.
Right.
So we trialled some other systems, and your initial question was, what difference did we see? Well, in the trials we put in these diverse crops, which we've gone to anyway from our production system. We now have a small dairy herd that's running on the farm, and so that the summer crops that roll right through several seasons as they metamorphose into permanent pasture, we now drill them with a combination of zeolite and seaweed, a product that we can get from AgriSea, actually, and we infuse that with some of the trichodermas. So as Joe says, it stores dry, and so it dries back and it stores a little bit like that, and we're able to run it through the air seeders. So we can simply do a 50-50 mix with our seed stock when we're ready to drill and blow it into the ground, and so that it's all through the ground in the zeolite. And so that's the mechanism we use. And the standout that was obvious to everybody when we first were doing it, and over the several years, we'd always leave a 30-foot wide strip through the paddock to see what the difference was.
Yep.
And when the dry hit, whenever it started to get dry, it would just be chalk and cheese. It was a definite line of better growth with the trichodermas in the ground, and that was well observed by my farming friend. So we persist with it. We use it all the time, but I can't be blowed leaving another 30-foot strip wide. It's just more work, and I've seen the result. And observation trials are for yourself.
Yeah.
You know, they're observation trials that to convince you as a farmer. Too often we forget that that's actually where it matters, is the person on the ground.
I'm
going to say, Georgia, Max is quite right there. There is a real lack of these observational trials, and that's something I'm really interested in. You know, for me, trichoderma biocontrol, it's been a lifelong mission. But in order to get that word out there, you can't be sitting in your ivory tower with your white coat on telling farmers what to do. You need to be on the ground and asking them what do they already do, what works well with them, what do they want to do. And these observational trials are a fantastic showpiece for the trichoderma. And one point that Max raised up about the dry conditions, this is where biocontrol, where trichoderma really comes into its own. It's when the plants come under stress that you see the true benefits of having a really good microbial symbiosis going on in the plant. It makes the plants stronger, healthier, and more resilient. And this is how that they often will, using trichoderma, it's not just for growth promotion, we use it for plant disease, it's used it for a whole lot of things, but all in all, it's the effect that it has on the plant that makes it more disease resistant. The healthier plant, the healthier you are, the better you are able to fight off coughs and colds. It's the same for plants.
Right, so it's their own support system to keep them healthy and growing well and avoiding disease.
And trichoderma will actually directly prime the immune system, what we call systemic resistance. So by forming an association with the roots, the immune system of the plant, so these are defence proteins that enable it to fight off attack from pathogens, they're primed so that if something then comes in and attacks the aerial part of the plant, so the leaves, they're primed with an immune response. Is this something vaccinated? So they're ready to go and will have a much faster, stronger, healthier response.
Yeah. So you were mentioning, Max, about collecting the isolates from the farm. What plants did you look at? Was it just ryegrass and clover or a mix of species, weeds?
As I said, that the idea that a fungal arrangement like trichoderma arrangement with a plant is, goes seamlessly across all in the plant kingdom was demonstrated to us by Robert in that time where we isolated from native trees. We went to the local gardens from a couple of families that had gardens there for a long time, and very carefully, as Joe says, the basis of Robert's work is good observation. He seems to be able to see a plant that's doing far better than it, as well as, you know, the surrounding plants, and select from that. And so it was everything. And actually, one of the ones that I enjoyed as I watched the trials happen around the country with Robert's work was one of the ones that had come off my farm that seemed to be doing well or in the trials in Pinus radiata came out of a ragwort.
Wow.
And I can take you to that piece of ground. That's what happens with observation. And I can take you to that piece of ground where it is. And it is great. It's a healthy piece of ground. I think there's another thing that's worth remembering too as we're doing it. If you've got damaged soils, and if the production system has been harsh on soils and there's a lack of biological processes, you will get a much better result putting something like trichoderma in than if you're plateaued with fairly healthy places. So it's a very remedial idea, I think.
Right. And you've described yourself as a soils first farmer. Can you expand on that a little bit?
Oh, it's really simple. There's all sorts of labels get thrown at you, particularly when you stick your head up a bit politically. And in the past, I hope it's gone now with this, in the agricultural science world, it's a fairly, as you know, it's a fairly stroppy environment, you know. The knives are out. And so the sort of demand that I have a label, we just always have said, because it's what we do, is that soils first farming just means that when you make any decision at all on your farm, you consider the impact on the soils first.
Yeah.
A real minor example of that, if you're driving down the paddock and you're about to lurch through the paddock, you don't drive through the wettest bit and wreck it. You know, you'll look for a dry ground, or you'll look for, if you have to drive through the paddock, you'll look for somewhere to go that's less than that. And that idea can extend almost any part of the decision making on farming, including the financing. If you get yourself in a corner where you think, oh, I have to increase production, have to put on the extra stock units and whatnot, you consider the impact on your soils before you do it.
Yeah. So always,
to me, it's that's the mantra.
So where should farmers or growers start when thinking about incorporating trichoderma into their systems?
If you're asking me that question, well, in the finish, one of the joys of being a farmer, I have something like 80-odd paddocks on my little farms, you know. And
yep.
So I can play anywhere, can't I? It's not an excuse to say, oh, where can I start? You just start. You know, the next time you're planting something, start looking around and choose where you would isolate from. But I think the beauty of the reason that I'm very happy to be here supporting Joe and Lincoln Agritech is that they set out to work alongside us, opposed to, it does seem that the industry with trichoderma is one of the blockages has been, is everybody's thought, oh, we'll isolate a trichoderma, and then we'll patent it, and then we'll clip the ticket on that piece of life forever. And it's kind of a useless idea for us to progress, particularly when there's so many different varieties, and there's so many different ways of association in so many different circumstances that the principle should be examined and followed and experimented with. And that's where I enjoy Lincoln Agritech's approach to that, where they're not seeking to, if you like, patent life. I think it's held us back enormously.
Yeah. So, Joe, can I...
Yeah, if I can follow up on that, Meg. I think, too, part of that has been, you know, in the past, farmers and growers have had a lot of chemicals at their disposal, and people have had this idea that we can use biocontrol microorganisms and replace like for like. And the model with the chemical, of course, is patent, it's making money, it's making that company rich. Trichoderma doesn't fit that model in so many ways, and one of those is, yes, it is a live organism, and that clipping the ticket on life, by the time you go through the process of actually getting a damn patent out there, someone would have found a better trichoderma. You know, in every gram of soil, there's over a billion fungi, and I think around about, someone has quoted 70% of those are trichoderma. They are everywhere. They're all over your farm. If people don't wish to use a commercially prepared trichoderma, they can always look to link with a researcher and do a bit of investigation and pull some out on their own farm. There are multiple ways around it. The thing I like about trichoderma is, unlike an expensive patented chemical from a large multinational, you can buy trichoderma in a shiny packet from a big company, or you can do as Max does and brew it up in a shed down the back of the farm and spray it on yourself. It's there for everyone. It's used in a lot of countries. Very popular in India. Their agricultural service finds really good trichodermas and then takes it out into rural communities and inoculates the community compost heap. And then this compost heap is used as fertilizer in the fields, and therefore they bring the trichoderma into the fields. And when they start a new compost heap, they kind of treat it like a bit of yogurt. They take some of that compost, use it to inoculate the trichoderma to the new one, and it's used freely for that whole community to get the benefit from it. So it doesn't really fit the money-making model.
There's a point in there that I find important for me, to my understanding, and that is that when we take individual trichodermas like we have been, and we've been using mixes lately because the diversity is the key. Having lots of different things is what the key is. And so when you are introducing a trichoderma, you're not trying to monoculture your trichoderma. You're just introducing a very good strain that seems to symbiotically work with everything there. And so that when we plant a paddock of it, we overwhelm the soils with a lot of it, knowing full well that in the soils is full of the resident trichodermas and fungi. And so that's all we're trying to do is to, if you like, nudge the diversity in a direction that it might like to take. And it does seem to. The other thing that I find fascinating is that it does seem in this world there's a great deal of symbiosis. I was sort of taught through plant pathologies and things that everything's in competition, everything's eating everything else, and that's what you're up against. Actually, it doesn't seem to be true in this world. It does seem there's a high degree of cooperation in the fungal world. And if you can snap onto a happy medium of that, things do seem to be pretty healthy. And that's an observation that lots have made.
Yeah, that's really interesting. I'm particularly interested in the fact that it's, as Joanna said, you can kind of inoculate a community compost heap and, and spread it out and keep it running. That's awesome. And it's so accessible to farmers as well. It doesn't have to be
expensive.
It's a
technology that's accessible to everyone. Doesn't matter what your economic background is or your situation or your farming system. It's if you're going to deal with researchers who are going to be adaptable, who are willing to work with you and say, what's your system? How can we make this work? Then it will work. But you can't be treating the trichodermas like you would a chemical, that it's a one-stop shop, off the shelf, this is how it works. It needs to be tailored to the individual.
Mm. So jumping off that, where is trichoderma research heading? What areas are worth exploring further, in your opinion, Jo?
Well, it's an interesting question there, because, you know, for the last sort of 25 years, there's been a lot of trying to convince people that biocontrol really works. And so a lot of that research is focused on, you know, university research, proving that we can control diseases, that we can promote growth. I kind of see that now has moved out of that academic arena because we know it works. So we're interested in exploring, the research that we're interested in is really coming to grips with some of those relationships that are going on. And we're particularly interested in another deeper level of the symbiosis, because it turns out that most fungi have bacteria that live inside them. This is a very common thing. We're finding this more and more reports of it each day in the literature. We've been doing some work with trichoderma, and we've found that indeed trichoderma also has bacteria inside it. And an awful lot of these bacteria are known to also offer plant benefits. And we're coming up with this thought that, you know, trichoderma works so well, not just because of itself, because nothing works in isolation. It's trichoderma and its bacterial buddies that it lives with is actually what is promoting all that good growth and all that biocontrol. And we're particularly interested now, too, in finding trichoderma that have nitrogen-fixing bacteria inside them, with the hope that we can then add that trichoderma into plants that will enable those plants to fix nitrogen.
Wow, that would be incredible.
That's really what we're interested in. Is whether these, you know, how does this symbiosis work? Because it's not just one trichoderma per plant. There are multiple trichodermas in one plant. They all seem to work together. Plants themselves form interconnections through their mycelial linkages, and trichoderma will grow inside and outside of the root. So you could have an entire field that is connected through a mycelial superhighway of multiple species of trichoderma. It's a many-layered symbiosis. It's, the more we dig, the more we find.
So, Max, how did you end up extracting DNA in the lab in Lincoln with Jo?
Well, it just as you might have gathered, is that I found the whole subject so extremely fascinating, and Jo works at a very high level in terms of the what can be done with the DNA. And I sent some plant material that I had planted from ages ago to see whether or not we could trace back some of the original DNA that we'd sent down. And I have to tell you that through Jo's eyes, I've come to understand how complex that world is. While absolutely fascinating, for me, I think I'll have to stick to the observational trials.
Max, you were great in the lab.
Well, it was very interesting, Jo. Thank you very much. It was great.
You're a great student, a good learner.
It also taught me how complicated and how dangerous it is for us to be chasing pure science with genetics is to drive us as farmers. There's too many variables. We've got to have the practical stuff right there alongside it and be deciding what risks we take with where we go. That's it.
Yeah. Agreed.
From the whole package point of view, and always keeping things practical and useful from a farmer's perspective.
Yes.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, there's an awful lot of research that's done in this country, and you wonder who really is it done for? Because at the end of the day, it doesn't necessarily bring outcomes on the farm, for the end user. And I think we sometimes lose sight of that, and we need to remember that, you know, public good funding is for the good of New Zealand, not just for a couple of academics.
I think that you've hit, if we could perhaps finish on that point, you've hit on the exact problem. I'm 70-odd now, and so I've lived entirely through the more market experience of the 70s, 80s, 90s, and now in 2020 with COVID, we're starting to re-examine some of those values in the marketplace selling into the farming system, driving our research effort is not healthy. We need to have a good supply of pure research that's being done for the whenua, for the ground, at ground level, to be alongside it. And that's what's missing.
Mm. Absolutely.
Well, thank you both for taking the time to chat with me today. That's been really interesting, and sharing your knowledge on trichoderma. We've just got a peek into the incredible potential for this type of fungi to improve farming systems, but I'm sure we'll be hearing a lot more from you, so thanks.
You're welcome.
No problem.
The Landwise Promoting Sustainable Crop Production podcast series was brought to you by our sponsors. We appreciate the generous support from BASF, Hawke's Bay Regional Council, Vegetables New Zealand, and Processed Vegetables New Zealand. We'll be right back.